Succession number 10602, Reel 10.
What was the name of your troop ship, Mr. Elliot?
The HMT Dorsetshire.
What was it like?
It was, I think, about 10 or 11,000 ton ship, painted white. It had a blue, I think, a blue streak around the ship, you know, about halfway up or so. Just a distinguishing mark around it. It was fairly crowded. As there was a full complement of troops, not only Durham's, but almost, it was a reinforcing ship going to India. When we got on the ship, we were told the decks we had to go to, and then we were given hammocks to sleep in.
How much of your equipment were you allowed on the deck?
Very little. We had a sea kit bag, and all the others was packed in the hold. We were not allowed to carry weapons or anything on it. We just had our normal uniforms. We had the SD uniforms. We were in the sea kit bags. We had khaki drill uniforms, which had been issued in Britain. They were issued at Kattrick before we left, with the pith helmet. Everybody going out there was issued with a pith helmet. Now, when you got to India, you got, you got the real one, which was in India. The pith helmet was generally used just for fatigues or walking around. Topi. You got the topi. That was the more solid one.
What was the rest of your uniform like that they had given you?
The khaki drill, well, there was khaki drill shorts, khaki drill slacks, and a khaki drill shirt, and a khaki drill jacket.
Was this one of each, or did you have two sets?
Oh, I can't remember. I think we only had the one, because there was no way we could get them cleaned on the ship. So if we'd had maybe two, I just can't remember that. But we had a small sea kit bag, which would be about half or a third the size of the normal kit bag, and it was classed as a sea kit bag. And when you put your gear in there, there was very little room left for anything else.
Did you still have putties with your shorts?
Oh, yes, sure. Not while we were going on the ship, but we had the putties with us in our kit. Now, when we got to India, when we put I don't think we put the shorts on until we got to barracks. I think we were always in slacks. That's difficult, I can't remember that. But we didn't take our SD off until we got into the Mediterranean, because it was a bit cold. It was late in the autumn. We had a pretty smooth trip. Normally we were told the Bay of Biscay was rough, but it was fairly smooth when we went through.
How excited were you? This was your first journey on a ship of any size.
Oh, I think a bit apprehensive. I think a few of the lads shed a few tears when the ship pulled away from Southampton, because they didn't know how long they would be away, or when if ever they would ever come back. Because, you know, when you were a regular soldier in those days, you got the old soldiers coming back before being discharged after the completing the 7 years, that some of them used to tell you some areas and stories. You know, maybe the truth, maybe pulling your leg just to see how you would take it. But you got all these feelings once the ship left. But gradually, you got to know the other lads on the ship, you got to know the regiments, and you just mucked in, because there was very little else you could do. You see, there was no soldiering. You couldn't soldier on a ship like that with the number of troops there was on it. You got a little PT, I think, run around the alleyways on the ship, but even that was nothing.
Had you had a send-off of any kind? Was there a band playing on the quay?
I think there may have been a band on the quayside, but which regiment I don't know. Usually there is a band when you come home, but you're so busy going up the gangplanks and getting yourself sorted out to start the journey, you just cannot remember what happens. You see, as it happened to us, we had travelled for nearly 2 days from Catterick, and we'd been on a train where there was no way you could get any sleep. And then we came off the train, went straight onto the ship, and then we were put under guard duty straight away. So I was at a watertight door, you know, very soon after boarding ship.
How many dirhams were with you?
It was a very big draft. I think it was nearly between 170 and 200. It was normally a big draft. And we were going out, and there was as big a draft coming back. But there was quite a few from the squad which I'd trained in, as well as in the company I'd been in. There's two distinctions there. I think I remarked about squads at the depot. Well, most of those lads would be on that ship, because we'd had a year's service in, we were there for reinforcing anywhere where the army would care to send us. But generally in those days, the own battalion received the trained recruits and then trained them until the trooping season started, which was always in the autumn, and you were always about a year or just over a year in England, unless you were a specialist or being trained for specialist training. But once you got on the ship, it was like trying to kill a deer. You got up on a morning, or you rolled your hammock up and your bedding. Did your toiletry. That was a bit rough to, you know, so many people trying to get the same place at the same time. But it worked out. You got there in the end. There was no... Can't remember anything unusual happening in regards to that.
You said that you'd been given hammocks. How did you take to getting into and out of a hammock?
Oh, we had a bit of fun with that. I've seen a few lads fall out. Sometimes we helped each other to get in to make sure we got in. Oh, yes.
Could you sleep well in them?
Yes, once you got in, they were reasonably comfortable. You know, there was no mattress or anything. It was just what the hammocks were made of, like sailcloth, you know. It was very strong, but by the time you got in and you put your blankets in and got down, you swayed with the motion of the ship. But as I say, we had a quiet journey, so there was very little... There was a certain amount of seasickness.
Did you travel all right?
I travelled all right. I travelled back, fine. But if we'd caught it in the Bay of Biscay, if the Bay of Biscay had been rough, I think everybody would have been, or very few wouldn't. But we caught it smooth, so we had time to settle down to the movement of the ship. And of course, when the first day, first 24 hours, you were on duty. So, you know, you were standing, you were swaying with the ship and everything else.
What time was reveille on the ship?
About 6 o'clock, I think.
And then you rolled your hammock.
You rolled your hammocks up, then you got your breakfast. That would be maybe about 8 o'clock.
What was the food like you were getting on the board? Was it better than what you'd been getting in the barracks?
No, it was never as good. It wasn't bad, but it was never as good as the food we had in barracks.
Was it the same, just badly cooked, or was it an inferior product coming through?
I think it would be about the same product, only being a small a ship of that size catering for so many. Most of the potatoes that were boiled were never peeled. They had the jackets on. So, to be quite honest, I can't remember very much about the meals.
Did you parade for breakfast in some way? I'd just go.
Or you would just, you know, the there would be a call, come over, breakfast up or whatever it is, and you just went and got it, and you sat down where you could, and there was no dining room, no dining space. You just took it to either the deck where you were at, or you went up on top deck, onto the deck where you were allowed to go onto, and you would just sit there and have your meals.
And this was the same for other meals?
Oh yes, always the same. There was usually, I think, breakfasts was either bacon, sausages, or boiled eggs. Something, you know, which wouldn't take a lot of preparing. And you got two slices of bread and butter or margarine, whatever it was. You see, when you were in barracks, you would have margarine, as half margarine, half butter, and maybe jam or marmalade on the table. But you couldn't have that because there was no tables wait a minute. I think I'm wrong there. I'm not sure, but I think they might have had a table which was fixed to the bulkhead, which came down, and I think so many, the men who had the hammocks, I think there would be a table. Difficult to remember now. But yeah, I think there might have been a table, and when you finished, you cleaned the table, and there was like something where you could hook up to the side, which gave you the room. But that's a puzzle.
Outside of actually having a duty on a given day, how was your day organised for the?
Oh, just left yourself. After you'd done your duties and other than meals, the Lascars, the seamen, they cleaned the ship down every morning, and they cleaned it down at night. And other than that, you just went on, but you were only allowed on certain areas, because you carried married families as well and officers. Well, they had the better accommodation. But it was difficult putting the hours in. Now, many of the lads would play cards or read. If you had books, you would read books. There would be a competition every day how far the ship had travelled. Maybe penny, tuppence or something for a kitty. And the one nearest to the time, no ship's crew was allowed to enter that. Only the soldiers. None of the ship's crew, because they could have fiddled it any way they liked. But how much mileage they'd done from one day to the other. But what you always used to forget was the time allowance going east. You see, maybe an hour, 2 hours. By the time the ship got to the end of that day, it was actually travelled two hours or 3 hours less. The time distance. Oh yes, if anybody had books or papers, they would grab, read them. But there was also a canvas swimming bath. It wasn't really a swimming bath, but it was meant for you to go in if you wanted to. It was filled with sea water. And sadly we lost a lad out of the Yorkshire Light Infantry, the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. In the Red Sea, just out the Red Sea, we'd stopped at Aden, dropped somebody off, and we pulled out into the Indian Ocean. And when suddenly there was a shout, "Man overboard!" We never got him. Never got him back.
Accidental or a deliberate?
No, accidental. One of those sheer accidents. But again, it was avoidable, because he was breaking the rules. The lads had been, these youngsters had been diving into the water, swimming, and the strict orders of the ship was you did not sit on the ship's rail at any time. Anybody caught would be punished. Well, seemingly this lad had been in the pool, come out, and he was sitting on the, what is they call it? Uh, anyway, he was sitting on this rail, ship's rail, and another lad dived in, and the water splashed up to his face, and he suddenly put his hands up to stop the water from going into his eyes, and he fell over. And there was a sudden shout, and the ship turned straight away, and the seaman with two, I think, I'm not sure it was two boats, but at least one boat, and they were in the area where the man had gone over, but there was no sign of him. And the ship circled, and the little boat went round and round, but they couldn't find him. They called the lad Henty, Private Henty of the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry. It was sad when it happened, but there again broke the rules. You see, a simple mistake, simple breaking of rules. I think the lad would never have thought of it at the time, you know, when they'd been diving. You do some daft things when you're young, at least. But I don't think anybody could have foreseen an accident like that.
You've mentioned that rule, and the one that you were had to go around or move around in only in a certain area. Were there any other rules that were very strictly adhered to on the ship?
Invariably, yes. You weren't all allowed to go to one side of the ship, because the weight of going to one side of the ship would balance the ship, and it could cause trouble. You either ship's officers or army officers would be walking around to make sure. That happened with Henty, when they shouted a man overboard, and everybody was going to that side where he'd fallen to watch the rescue, if possible. But half of them were ordered to go back the other side. I remember that quite plainly, that. I'll always remember it because of the lad. I'll always remember his name. And that was 1933.
Did you see many officers on your journey? Did they come to see you often?
You saw your own officers. They'd come and the officers of the draft would come and have a look at you, and orderly officers of the other regiments. But they rarely stopped. There's nothing, very little they could do about it. They'd come and give you a lecture that this will happen or this won't happen, or you'll be doing this or you'll be doing that. You know, typical forces way of trying to keep you occupied or to look forward for the next few days or so.
Did they give you lectures on Indian life and what to expect and what to protect yourselves against?
Well, we got MOs who gave us lectures on what we should not do rather than what we should do. I think you can pick out what I mean by that.
These are mainly to do with sexual activities.
That was
PD.
It, yes. But it was... The thing that amazed me was when we arrived at Bombay, we saw snake-like queues of women with little baskets on their heads, and they were actually loading coals onto a ship where we would have the trucks, you know, turn over it straight in chutes into the coal ships. These had women just going with baskets, and they're just pouring the baskets down into the ship's stokehold, where, you know, that's what amazed us. That amazed me anyway, and I think it amazed most of the lads.
Before we come to your arrival, you say that the officers came to visit you just occasionally. Did you have any drills at all on the boat of regular nature?
No, couldn't have them.
Boat drill, anything of that nature?
Oh, you had boat drill. You were given your areas for boat drill, for where you should go should there be emergency. But there was practice, fire on the ship. You'd get the ordinary safety measures, same as when you were on the bulkhead doors, the watertight doors. I mean, the orderly officer might come along and say, "Now, how do you secure that?" But not everyone would do it. Maybe he might not do it to the two running. He may do it to various. But you could expect it, you see, and you had to be able to answer the questions of why. Well, the ship's orders were there for you to read. and you were advised to read them all, but don't ask me what they were now, not nowadays, it's too long ago. But yes, there was we had bow drills, but not very often. We had cork life belts where you put over your neck and tied them around your waist, like two cork there and two at the back. You had like four, I think it was. And you put your arms around and you tied them around your waist, and that was for safety. But that, even that was still including the small boats which you would get into if it was emergency. It never happened.
Were you ever called up for a roll call, for example, to see where you all were at any given time?
Well, there's no way you could get up, so it didn't matter. I suppose it might have happened. You know, we had senior NCOs, and senior NCOs always do the dirty work. I mean, they report to the officers. I mean, they would go around, where so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. But I can't recall any, you know, being all together in a roll call. Maybe there's a few here and there and that. It might have been, but I just can't be clear of it.
Did the NCO sleep with you on the same deck?
The sergeants didn't, but the up to corporal, yes. They had the same kind of accommodation as we had. I'm not sure what the sergeants had, mine, sergeants upwards. But corporals, up to corporal, we all had the same. We had the same in barracks. Unless the sergeant, the platoon sergeant in barracks, was married and living out, there would always be a small bunk, and the senior NCO would use that. But the sergeant would still have all his gear there for parades. But normally, corporals, I mean, in Barrack Poor, where we were at, we had corporals in the same room. I think we had about three full corporals in the same room where we were at.
Keeping your decks clean, had you to do that? You have mentioned that the seamen...
The Lascars did that.
And were they inspected by the ship's company or ship's officers?
The ship's officers. The seamanship came under the officers, ship's officers. Had nothing to do with the army. The ship's officers were always... Their orders were first. Appertaining to the runner of the ship. And the military, no matter what the ranks were, the ship's captain was boss. I don't think we ever saw him, but he was boss.
You never saw the captain? He didn't come round?
No, I can't ever remember seeing him. And don't ask me his name, because I wouldn't know. And I couldn't tell you the names of the senior NCOs or the officers of my regiment which went out with us, because I just couldn't remember them.
You mentioned the fact that you read books and played cards. Was gambling encouraged on the boat?
Gambling is gambling, no. Gambling was still outlawed. You're punished if you were caught. But what used to happen, most of the senior NCOs would turn a blind eye, because they knew that there was nothing else the lads could really do. You know, there'd be lads would be playing a game, and if an officer was coming, somebody would be watching. They would shout, he's an officer, so they'd pick all the cards up, put them in the pockets or wherever it was, and just that. There could be a circle. The officer knew they'd been playing cards, but he couldn't prove it. But they turned a blind eye. Now, you say that, but when we were returning from India to the Sudan, we were encouraged to play bingo. Only it was called Aussie Aussie in those days, not bingo as it is today. We were encouraged to play it, to kill part of the time. And from Bombay to Port Sudan is only halfway from England to India. Yet you were pulled on tight. But I think again what happened there was that we were young soldiers going out. But when we were coming back, we were old soldiers. We went at just about a year's service in, where most of us had five in. Some of them had six, and some were on the way home with almost seven in.
Did you ever discover why the army was so much against gambling? Was it that it caused trouble between soldiers?
Yes, it could. And I fully agree with it too. I mean, you weren't allowed to gamble even in civilian life, not openly, and it was worse in the army. Although, mind, I do know it did happen. Senior NCOs and warrant officers knew it happened, even in there. But they would turn a blind eye to it unless it became nasty in reports, you know, if there was one hook trying to cause a lot of misbehaviour, then they would stamp on it as hard as possible. The worst crime in the army was stealing. If you stole from a mate, you would get severe punishment. The only one worse than that is refusing to obey an order. To refuse to obey a direct order was the highest, and the next after that, as far as I know, was stealing.
Was there much stealing on the boat? Did you lose possessions there?
No, I never lost a thing on the boat. No. You see, there was always somebody around. As I say, you know, the ship was so compact, and there were so many people on it. If anybody did steal, they would have difficulty getting away with whatever they were trying to steal, because there was always somebody knocking around. No, I there may have happened, little things may have gone, but generally I don't even recall it.
The popular naval game Crown and Anchor, was that played?
Not on the ship going out, but it was on the ship coming back.
That was illegal as well?
That was
it?
Illegal. All gambling was illegal.
But you didn't have it on the ship going out?
Not that I recall. It may have happened, but from my own experience, no. Even Aussie wasn't played going out. You played it. You were encouraged to play it coming home, but you were not going out. That's what I found amazing.
Leisure activities. Was it sport on the boat? Could they organise anything?
Very little. We had a canteen on the boat where you could go and buy sweets, chocolate or stuff like that, but and cleaning tack for your gear. If you wanted to clean your gear up, keep yourself clean. But I cannot remember any organised entertainment or anything.
Boxing or anything of that nature, did you have any of that?
By the bean, but I just can't remember. No, it may have happened, but that's something I was never in. I know this may sound daft, but I've never been interested in boxing. But there may have been some, but I just can't remember. Not boxing. Might have done, but
Was the discipline on the boat good? Was anyone getting into trouble for anything? It was a long way, a long time.
Oh, 3 weeks. Not really. I cannot recall anybody being charged going out. There may have been by other units and like that, you know, but I cannot remember anybody being charged. The only thing which most of the army officers were strict about was the guard duties on the ship. That is one thing they were always strict about, finding the man awake and at his job. But other than that, the discipline was more relaxed. I think it was quite right too, because when you've got an awful lot of men on a boat, and it's not a big boat, you know. It looks big when you go onto it, but when you get the number of troops that's on it, there's not much room. And there's not much room for scuffling and disruption. To be quite honest, I enjoyed the trip out. I know there was a lot of times when I felt like, you know, why am I on this ship? But then, that was maybe when we were out in the open sea, when you couldn't see land at either side. I'm a landlubber, by the way.
The boredom itself must have got to you at times.
Why?
That didn't cause any frictions, of course. Sometimes very it does.
I cannot recall anybody, you know, because you'd always get somebody who would be a bit of a comedian, and they would, you know, for the armed forces, the army does find the odd comedian even in peacetime. When the least expect it, there'll always be somebody there. They might just sit down and have a bit of sing-song. They'll do that. You know, I've known the lads, but that's further on in India. I mean, I knew the bunch of the lads in a platoon. They went and carried soil in front of the bungalows and tried to grow flowers. Just, you know, for to break the monotony.